Welcome to Mowate Talks, Business Insights Unplugged. Join us as we share insights and perspectives from technology and operations leaders, industry analysts, and visionaries on how today's technology trends are transforming their businesses and communities. Sit back and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome to Mowate Talks, Business Insights Unplugged. I'm Saurabh Sehgal, sales leader at Mowate, and your host for this episode. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with a remarkable and charismatic leader, Nino Mesuradze, Chief Operating Officer for North America at Ingenico. Over the last two decades, Nino's career has spanned finance and operations, with a focus on operational excellence, profitability, and reshaping customer relationships. Nino has driven transformative initiatives throughout the US, Canada, and Mexico. Ingenico and Mowate have been partners for five amazing years. I've had the privilege to witness and be part of some of these initiatives, so it makes today's conversation even more special. Beyond her professional achievements, what truly sets Nino apart is her passion for mentorship and empowering future leaders, especially women in business. I'm thrilled to have an inspirational leader to speak about her leadership style, technology trends, and digital innovation that is shaping the future of the payments industry. Nino, welcome, and I'm very excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Saurabh, and thank you for the kind words. Happy to be here.
Brilliant, brilliant. Nino, I was fascinated to learn that you started your professional journey in the world of finance before stepping into the role of COO, where you are now focused on driving operational excellence and enhancing customer experience. That sounds like an incredible journey. I'm sure there are pivotal moments that have shaped the leader that you are today. Tell us more about your journey and the transition.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That's a very good question. And I have to say, I've thought about it myself. When I look back at my career, you know, my kind of the first answer to myself, the instinctive one is like, oh, you know, it's just life. Like one thing came to another and, you know, just one step after the other and things just happen. And then I have to keep myself a little more real. And I have to slow myself down and really, you know, that's not quite true or not the full truth. The fact is that, you know, it's kind of part of my nature. I like going to places that I haven't been to before. A little bit of a pioneer in that way. I like trying new things out, you know. I've gone from one country to another, from finance to operations. That seems to be just really me. And it's not just following path, you know, casually. The fact is that when opportunities came up, and the more challenging, the better, I took them. Right. It was exciting to me. I jumped on it. And whether it was in personal life, like exploring different countries, or at work, like taking challenging projects, very often was, you know, kind of jumped in a cold water and swam. I worked hard, very hard. And that's also part of my nature. If I do something, I want to do it right, or I don't want to do it at all. Still, even in personal life, I don't like spending my time on something that either doesn't bring value or I'm not really putting myself into it and I'm not present in the moment. So, and luckily I had leaders and mentors who saw what I was doing and liked what I was doing. And that's luck. I do know and I do realize that a lot of people were very hard but don't have the success that they probably deserve. But I was lucky and my leaders saw me for who I was. And here I am. Specifically transitioning from finance to operations, that's the reflection of my approach, I guess my style, when I was in finance, especially when I became the CFO. I often think about it. When I became the CFO, my CEO at that point asked me, well, what type of CFO do you want to be? And I was like, well, what type of question is that? A good one. You know, like, what other type would I want to be? But I know now what she was asking, and I learned it pretty quickly. I was the CFO who was very close to the business. A good day to me is when I could go home and say, man, today we did something. Today, we nudged the company forward. We solved the customer's problem. We found a way between sales and product and finance to find a win-win between the customer and between Ingenico. And I was very close to the business. I saw myself as the business partner. And I encouraged my team to do the same. And especially, at the very early days of becoming the CFO, the CEO had to go on a long leave. And the CEO at the time and myself, we had to take on her role. So I was brand new in being CFO to start with, and then I had to take on the most crucial role in the region. And that got me even closer to the business, right? So I never really had a chance to not be close to business. And so when the opportunity came up for taking the role of the CEO, it was really very smooth and kind of felt natural and logical. And you know what's interesting? Honestly, it's not that different. Of course, finance and operations is very different, but my approach is not, right? So whether here or then, I'm close to business. My style is to, cut through the noise, really, cut through the noise and really concentrate on what really matters, regardless whether I'm in finance or operations. I think, and we've all experienced that, meetings that they need to happen, long conversations that bring not much. I like being close to actual problem and concentrating on that. I'm a truth teller, and that has always worked for better conversations and better results.
Absolutely, Nina. That is commendable and inspiring. As they say, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. The themes you brought out there, grabbing opportunities, being a pioneer and explorer, and asking yourself, what have I achieved today? I'm sure lots of aspiring leaders listening in will truly benefit from your experience. So tell me, Nino, we live in a world where innovation is rapidly revolutionizing how business is done, whether B2B or B2C. My view is that financial services in general and the payment technology sector face unique challenges for innovation compared to other industries. How would you describe leading change and innovation to deliver better experience to your customers and merchants?
Thank you. That's a fair point. It's such a strange place, right? Because on one hand, the demand for innovation, the change of customer behavior and expectations is very fast. It changes very quickly. And, you know, not to say the bad word, but during COVID, it's really accelerated that demand even more. And at the same time, though, the innovation in payments industry is very slow. If you think about it, I mean, we don't have to think much about it. We're still using checks, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least in the U.S., it's still very common to use checks. There are even people who pay grocery bills with checks at the cashier stand, and some grocery stores actually take it. And also, you know, if we think about FSA cards or EBT cards, a lot of credit or debit cards of that type or WIC, they still use Magstripe. We are in the era of far beyond Magstripe, but many of us still have to use cards that only have Magstripe. You know, part of it is because of strict regulations, which we would all agree that that's a good thing in payments. Part of it is slow adoption. And also part of it is human behavior, right? I mean, especially the way how the consumer today wants to pay is vastly different depending on the demography and on the age. So the younger generation is very quickly to adopt new technologies. They wouldn't be satisfied if the new technology was not available, but there are people who won't even try contactless. Contactless, even though that's not necessarily a new technology, not at all a new technology, the adoption rates are still below 50, or just about around 50, which is still shockingly low, because it's faster, better, it's better to the terminals, it's easier to maintain, all that stuff. So, and in general, obviously, because the innovation in payments is really driven by the consumer, Ingenico always tries to stay very close to the consumer and develop accordingly and exceed customer expectations. That's the goal. And as far as like strategy and vision goes, Ingenico's vision is divided in three parts. Accept, manage, and enhance. So accept being, you know, really accepting the payment terminal in the most simple way. Manage is managing the terminal from day one to the last day. And that will mean different things, whether it's a retailer or an acquirer or processor, you know, like some or banks. So anybody who has a big fleet will have similar but yet different needs, how they manage the fleet. And enhance, so adding functionalities that are new and innovative and make the lives of our customers and their customers happy. That's the trick, right, being in place for Ingenico. We have customers.
Thank you.
And
thank
we
you.
Have to provide services and products that serve their customers, right? So we're kind
True.
Of jumping a layer there in terms of understanding what they need and understanding what will make them happy so our customers have a higher retention of merchants and higher satisfaction of their customers.
You're spot on, Nino. It's so important to find the right balance between pace of innovation, user adoption, and requirements and needs based on demographics, as you stated. That also leads me to think that we are operating in an ever-evolving landscape of customer requirements and expectations. What do today's consumers expect when it comes to omnichannel experience and seamless transactions, especially with all the different payment methods and solutions out there? You yourself mentioned payment methods like contactless, where there are still the adoption is less than what you would expect and you would like to see, but there are also people who are still using checks. So in that context, you know, how do you bring about the right experience for everyone?
Mm-hmm. That's 100% agreed. It is tricky. But specifically, you mentioned omnichannel. The expectation is to have exact the same experience in-store as not in-store, online. So retailers are put in the place to offer the same perks, like whether it's coupons or different types to pay to the customer inside the store as well as online or on the app. And to respond to that, Ingenico makes sure that there are different ways to pay, like whether it's you know, digital wallet or buy now, pay later, or even crypto in some cases. As well as enable the retailers or the merchants of any type to offer the same type of discounts, offers, coupons, gift cards, loyalty programs that the customer expects nowadays, because that's also what they get and what's so attractive for online shopping.
Thank you. Thank you.
Again, you're absolutely right. I think customers definitely expect the same kind of experience irrespective of the channel they are using to shop or buy products and services. It reminds me, you know, there are occasions, or there used to be occasions, and I'm still sure there are some cases like that, when pricing is different online compared to store, and then you're left thinking what's going on here. So that's very useful context that you've given to our listeners. And it's fascinating how the retail and the e-commerce industry is shaping some of those experiences and expectations from the customers. So in your view, Nino, what are the key opportunities and challenges that will shape the future of the payment industry?
We spoke about this a little bit earlier, that you know, the challenge and the opportunity at the same time is that there are a lot of fast-changing demands and expectations, what the payment experience should be like, how fast we're actually moving to digital, and at the same time, how slow the adaptation of some of those changes is in reality or are in reality.
Thank you.
Some of them, actually, as much as it looks very cool, don't really work out in day-to-day life. So you've probably seen some stores where you would just walk in, walk out, didn't even have to do anything. They were more or less experimental. You won't see them anymore, because it was actually didn't really work in day-to-day life and was too big of an investment for a merchant to actually absorb. That all being said, Ingenico makes a lot of investments into future-proofing our products and our offerings. I think it is probably fair to say that the next thing we will be seeing more and more will be biometrics. I'm not a product person, but that is definitely a big topic. And you'll see that everywhere, right? Whether you're in the airport or in a lot of places now, you go and your face is recognized, and that allows you to do the next step. So that's going to most likely impact payment space as well. Again, I'm not a product person, but that seems to be on the future. And Ingenico makes sure that we stay in sync with the trends and make the necessary investments to be and stay relevant.
That's so true, Nina. We can't just have innovation for the sake of it. It has to solve a problem. It has to make the user experience better. And it really has to bring about an experience that people want to actually try out. On a lighter note, I have a digital lock that I use on our front door. And I've often wondered, do I really need it? Because I still have to swipe the fob. It's as good as turning the key and entering the house. But, you know, it's something fancy and I bought into that. But it's an investment that I made about 5 years back. And I still to date question myself, was that really necessary? But anyhow,
too funny. I envision you like every time you open your door, you go like, was this a good investment?
Absolutely. It's a constant reminder.
That's funny.
Well, switching gears a little now, let's talk about your commitment to championing causes that really matter, be it your advocacy for mentorship, supporting women in leadership, or driving environmental initiatives. What sparked your interest in these areas and what kind of impact have you seen?
Thank you. Yes, these are one of the most important things to me, definitely. They are. Let's start with mentorship. I could not say enough how important I think mentorship is and coaching. I've had fantastic mentors, and I know for a fact that I won't be where I am without them, without their feedback, guidance, experience. And
thank you.
They did this simply out of kindness. They didn't have to spend time with me. And I'm talking from the very beginning of my career, even when I was working in a finance department while I was still going to college in Germany. They didn't have to sit down with me and explain things to me and share their experience, but they did. And that made me grow, and definitely is a big step in my journey from very beginning to now. And I just want to give back, really, like, you know, slightly philosophically speaking, to the universe.
I
think it's incredibly important. I think sometimes I might be annoying one or two younger people in my teams because they ask like a trivial question, probably just want yes or no answer, and I go, well, actually, this is why it's happening. And why specifically the focus on women? Because they need it most. It's just a fact. While I've been very lucky at Ingenico, and I still am, that I had the leaders who saw me for what I was able to do, and I did not have to deal with it at Ingenico specifically. It's true, right? I mean, it's the reality. And it really is from the beginning, from very young age to the very end, I'm assuming, that women have to deal with different type of upbringing and different type of expectations. I mean, from the beginning on, right, what is a little girl told? To be cute and to be quiet and, oh God, please keep that dress clean, right? While boys are usually encouraged to go out and play, go outside, explore. Boy comes home with dirty clothes, like, you must have had a good day. And trust me, I know, mine comes home with dirty clothes very often. And, you know, like all the characters of books, not all, but vast majority are boys, right? So, and not at Ingenico, but in a typical company, the higher you go up in the hierarchy, the bigger the chance that there will be more or less only men sitting in the room. So no wonder that the woman will feel like, I don't belong here, right? No wonder that she had to feel that probably in a lot of cases. And then we wonder why a lot of women have an imposter syndrome. Well, it kind of makes sense. Actually, it makes a lot of sense, right? So I think women need it a lot. They need to be encouraged to find a voice, you know, to trust their talent, to trust their abilities, to again cut through the noise and just know, like, okay, I'm capable to do this. I'm here for a reason. I deserve to be here just like anybody else. And feel confident to continue and find a way to be comfortable with it, because I don't think any human does a good job if you constantly feel like, oh, I don't think I should be here, right? So just enabling and encouraging and helping to get the most out of their talents and really utilize it to the maximum.
Thank you.
That's very true, Nina. I mean, biases do exist in our society, some conscious, some unconscious. And I think you've been spot on in highlighting the benefit of having great mentors, having great leaders to guide people through. And I think just as your journey has shown, having the right kind of leadership that encourages the right kind of behavior, the right kind of outcome, and builds the sense of belongingness, as you said.
Correct.
It's super important.
Very, very. Yeah, belonging is definitely a key word there. And that never ends, by the way, right? The journey of learning and growing never ends. And I would say luckily so, because it would be pretty boring if you stayed, you know, in the same place for the rest of your life. So I still really value people who take time and share their experience with me. I have mentors. I love my coach. Wouldn't be here without her. Very important, and it does not end, and neither should it.
Thank you.
It goes without saying that your personal and professional journey is impressive. Before we wrap up the podcast, our audience would love to know what fuels your passion outside of work and how do those interests shape your leadership style?
Thank you. Thank you.
My family, no surprises here. Actually, the other day, a colleague and friend told me, if you could close your eyes and wake up anywhere, like anywhere you want, where would you want to wake up? His answer was Key West. He wanted to close his eyes and wake up in Key West, and which I understand, nice place. But I said, at home. I want to be at home. The place where I really recharge, calm down, is actually at home. And I realized actually how good it is. So my family, I love traveling, absolutely love it. I tend to overdo it sometimes, so I need to make myself slow down sometimes because I'm like a child, like, oh, let's go here. The farther, the better, the more different.
That's the explorer than you.
Yeah, right? Like, the more different from my status quo, the better. And nature. I especially, you know, green places, forests, mountains. That's where I really feel grounded, and it's just magical, which is also the reason why I am so passionate about the environment. I don't know if it influences my leadership style, but it definitely has strong parallels, right? Like you said, yeah, traveling, the curiosity, wanting to go to new places, and wanting to give something to people I care about, be with people who would get something out of it. I think that's as important of a job for a leader as anything else, whether it's managing the P&L or making sure the operations go smoothly, right? I mean, that is our job as leaders, to be there for other people.
Words of wisdom, Nino. Any other closing comments that our listeners can take away and apply in their personal or professional lives?
I can try. But I can share some beliefs, and if it ends up to be valuable to somebody, even better. We talked a lot about trying new things and going to new places, and from my experience, it's definitely worth it. The worst that can happen is that you learn something, and the best that can happen is that you actually succeeded. But you will never know what would have happened if you hadn't taken the step. So I can only share from my experience that it is very rewarding and you always learn something. And I trust in positive outcomes. And, you know, when you go into something with that mindset and, you know, in a way are prepared that it might not work out, but at least it will be an experience, it will feel rewarding from my experience. And the other one that's really worked for me in both personal life and professional life is, you know, this approach of cutting through the noise and concentrating on what really matters and be transparent and say the truth. You know, it might be uncomfortable, and of course there are ways how you say it, but in my experience, it really elevates the conversations to the next level. It elevates the results to the next level. It elevates friendships, relationships with your family. That's been the guiding principle for me, and it has really worked for me. So I think if I had to, you know, say a couple things, those would be the two I would choose.
Brilliant, Nino. And I often say to people, the first step to resolving a problem is acknowledging the problem. If you can't acknowledge it, you can't resolve it. And you were spot on when you said, be truthful. You know, it's very important to say things and see things the way they are, and then go about tapping the best potential that you have to deliver. Nino, thank you for joining us today. I definitely feel rejuvenated. Your insights and experiences are truly inspiring, and we appreciate you sharing them with our audience.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and do share your thoughts in the comments section. We can't wait to bring you the next episode, so stay tuned for more.